Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
And now it is my pleasure to welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, Gary Danielson, lead analyst for the SEC on CBS. Gary, you saw what was purported to be a football game. It was a fabulous finish.
It's not nice.
Well, there was plenty of time to get through the aesthetically challenging moments of this game. Let's go through before the final furious run in the fourth quarter, before the touchdown started. What were you seeing out of Tennessee and Florida? What were they doing to each other that was keeping this so low scoring and making both offenses really, really struggle?
Yeah. Well, I think both offenses, could be pretty good. However, both coaching staffs were nervous about losing the game before winning it. They just didn't want to blow the game. And I think my halftime on camera is pretty much how I feel right now, is that both head coaches looked across the field and said, I don't think their quarterback can beat us. So I'm not going to let our quarterback beat us. And when you call a tentative game like that with a young quarterback, that message comes across very clear. You know, every time they call a play, they'll be careful with it. Don't try to force it in there. Make sure you don't get a turnover. And I felt both quarterbacks were a little hesitant trying to, throw the ball in tight spots because they didn't want to make mistakes. Now, they made mistakes anyway, I'll give you that. But just as many as there were coaching errors and questionable strategy and a plethora of other mistakes. So I thought I saw two pretty tight teams, understanding that, as I said during the game, a win is great, and obviously it keeps the masses off your back for a week, but a loss was brutal to both programs, and I think you could see the way the players played that really stuck out.
Well, you mentioned that these two teams and specifically these two offenses, they could be good. As you look out across the SEC, what is the ceiling for Florida and Tennessee? Two teams that would like to be in the conversation for the division title, but right now it looks like they've still got a ways to go before they could fulfill that kind of potential.
I think so, and I think that Tennessee's schedule is brutal, and it was a game, where they had a chance to get it, they had a couple chances early in the game to kind of, move away from Florida and make Florida open up, and who knows what kind of mistakes they were going to make if they had to do that, but for whatever reason, I think they had 28 plays in the third quarter, and 17 of them were in plus territory, and a number of them, as you know, were close to the goal line. And some questionable execution, some questionable strategy, and a couple of mishandled footballs really hurt them. But it's not going to be easy for Tennessee. They've got a lot in front of them, a lot on the plate, and they keep getting nicked with players going out. So that was a tough one to cough up. Florida's interesting. They've gone to back-to-back championships, playing primarily without a quarterback, playing all defense. And that's why I thought the Florida fan base and Jim McElwain panicked a bit early against Michigan. I mean, nobody has a problem with setting a young quarterback down for a series and then, letting him come back in after he catches his breath. But, boy, I thought it was a quick hook in the first game, or maybe not a quick return for Felipe Franks, because he's clearly a very talented kid who's very early in his career. And Florida's gone like 5 years without a quarterback. I don't quite understand why they wouldn't have a little patience, look long term, and understand that Felipe's got a bright future if he continues to progress, because he's got all the tools you need at that position.
Well, they also had a couple of young guys look like they started to show up. I mean, Kadarius Toney made a couple plays at the receiver position. Tyree Cleveland, obviously, with
Malik Davis
there
at the end, and Malik Davis with a big run. So they might just have the light at the end of the tunnel, some offensive firepower that's coming out. Jim McElwain felt that this was his most dominating offensive line. I don't think the word dominating is what he should have chose, but you know, Mac's his own guy. He kind of says stuff and you kind of shake your head. He's taken over Les Miles' spot here, you know, for interviews. So I do think they're competent. I do think they're battlers. And I do think that there may be some emerging playmakers that a confident Felipe Franks, maybe the last three or four games this year and the rest of his career, could be maybe the beginning of a turnaround for Florida. Let's put it this way. If Florida gets to the SEC championship this year, I think they have a fighting chance. Because for them to get there, that means Franks will have progressed and they'll walk into Atlanta with a quarterback this time. Because the last couple times, it was like fighting with one hand behind their back.
Well, as inept as the offense has looked at times on Saturday, you got to give some of the credit to the defense. And they had their bright spots. Was either of these defensive units really... did they really impress you? Did they really think that they were one of these units was one that you could kind of ride to an SEC division title? Or you think both these units have a lot of holes in them as well?
I think they do, to tell you the truth. I think Florida's front four defensive linemen are Gator-esque. I think their ends are good enough. I think they go six deep at defensive tackle. They've got a really nice rotation. Taven Bryan, number 93, I think is a potential kind of defender that could get in there and penetrate and make some plays. I do not think they're anywhere near where they were at linebacker from a year ago. And I am worried that they're talented out in the secondary, but very young. Yeah. The injury to Harris is going to prop up. Now, but that's, you know, I think one thing when you watch Florida play, they believe they're really good, but I do not think they're to the level of the Florida defense from a year ago. When I look at Tennessee, I just think they may be a year away with the playmakers they need. They've had another injury again at linebacker. I don't really see any game changer in the defensive line. Kongbo may be number one. Yeah. Taylor, number 19, maybe if he keeps improving. But I do not think they're dominating defense. I think they'd be a nice fit with an efficient, good offense. But there's still a ways to go, I think, with the defenses to be at that caliber where they can shut down opponents.
What was your in talking to Butch Jones, I mean, he's an interesting one in terms of coming into this game, being a guy that's won nine games a couple years, but is still is still very much – in a tricky spot, for lack of a better phrase. Yeah. What is the vibe you got from him just in talking to him about how he's handling maybe the pressures of this year and knowing how tough that schedule is that you mentioned?
Right. I think for the most part, I think he's a little frustrated. I think when, you know, Butch talks to you, he wants to point out that, you know, this place was in rough shape when I came here. Yeah. And we've built it slowly. It's a very tough conference, especially for Tennessee because of their crossover game with Alabama every year to really get it going. He believes he's in the right spot, but as he's built the team, you know, he kind of built the defense and then waited for Dobbs to get to that spot to win. And then now all of a sudden, Dobbs leaves and he's got to start all over with a quarterback. I think frustration is one, but I think also realization that, you know, in this league, maybe going forward, it might be two losses that wins the division is going to be the norm rather than the exception in these conferences. And that'll be really tricky for the playoffs as it moves forward because, you know, the SEC, how do you have a championship without the SEC involved? And if Alabama ever comes back to reality and plays like everybody else, you could have everybody knocking each other off with a couple losses, and then it's a struggle to get into the Final Four playoff.
Well, Alabama is in the SEC Game of the Week this weekend in Nashville, playing at Vanderbilt.
How about that?
Yeah,
I've been doing it. I guess CBS has had this package over 15 or 16 years and has never chosen Vanderbilt as the game of the week.
Really?
There were a little bit. I mean, that was a smart forward-thinking pick, though. I mean, you almost had to gamble a little bit that they were going to beat Kansas State when you made that call, I guess.
Right. Well, it is complicated, and maybe a peek into the under the tent might be interesting. You can only show a team five times, and you don't want to backload your picks too much. It's hard not to show Alabama in September. I mean, they are the best rating team, you have the Iron Bowl that you have to save a game for. And then you have your primetime game that's, November 4th or first weekend in November?
Correct.
And that's when they play LSU. So there's three games right on the schedule right there. You need a September game. You need the last game to save. And then you have a primetime game. So now how do you fit the other two games in? You know, so should you take Arkansas? Should you take Tennessee? And then all of a sudden here pops up Mississippi State. And, towards the end of the year, if Mississippi State is real and Alabama is going along as the number one team in the country, that might be a big rating game. So it's really a delicate balance. I'm not involved in it, but I do know there's a lot of talk that goes on every week on how to place these games. But Vanderbilt fit nicely for us this year because it allowed us to get Georgia on next week. They're the team that has emerged with that win. And if we would have taken next week's game with Alabama, we would have missed Georgia. So I think it's working out pretty well for us. And Vandy, as you said, has done well and done their part going 3-0.
The Commodores defense, very well coached.
Yes.
I get the sense that this will be a great test for Alabama and a great chance for us to learn a lot about this Alabama offense, particularly as it has gone against opponents a step down in competition since playing Florida State.
Yeah, and that's really the challenge that I think Nick Saban kind of fights. You ever see the movie Whiplash where the kid is the drummer and the professor, you know, he looks like he sounds like he's playing perfectly. And the conductor teacher keeps smacking him and saying, it ain't right. It ain't right. It ain't right. And pounding the table. Kind of reminds me of Nick. Nick has a bigger vision of what Alabama needs to do. I think Alabama every week is competing as he watches the tape against Clemson, Oklahoma, USC, Ohio State, Penn State, Oklahoma State. He knows the teams that he has to beat to win it all. And in his mind's eye, he knows what he has to have to beat them. So every week, you got to get through this week. I mean, he doesn't want a South Carolina pot to pop up. And it's very similar time back in 2010 when, you know, Stephen Garcia and Marcus Lattimore performed and Steve Spurrier performed a really keep away game and knocked them off. But as he puts this game together against a pretty good defense, I don't know if they're in the right weight division to play Alabama, but a pretty good defense, a very cerebral gym rat, in Kyle Shermer, whose father's a coach, who understands, I think, how to compete and control the ball, and he's really improved. But Alabama's playing a whole different game than everybody else, it looks like.
Is the distance between Alabama and the rest of the SEC, or do you think that there's a couple of teams through 3 weeks, maybe a Georgia, maybe a Mississippi State? Who are the other teams that you've looked out and seen that could maybe deserve a spot up in that top tier?
Well, you know, we've kind of bounced around here as to, you know, what that next team could be. And in the West, you know, everybody was saying, well, it's probably going to be Auburn, might be LSU, could be Texas A&M. Well, after 3 weeks, everybody goes, oh, that didn't work. Let's grab some other teams, So I think the Georgia win at Notre Dame proved that they can go into a big atmosphere, with having Chubb and Sonny Michel healthy this year, because beginning of last year, when Jacob Eason was playing, they both were tentative, especially Chubb. You couldn't use Michelle as a featured back every time. And I thought their wide receivers and their defense really wasn't ready for prime time. But I think in year two, they're becoming a good football team. So If they can get to that last game against Alabama, I think they would be the most likely team. I think Florida's interesting because their, as we mentioned, their youth on defense and their youth at quarterback, if they get there, will be a 10-game veteran by the time that game. After that, you know, I really have trouble. And I do think for me in this league, this is probably the first year that I've seen a significant drop off. You know, I thought up before maybe Ole Miss could catch him. Maybe LSU had the talent, you know, with Fournette to catch him. But this year now, it is beginning to look like if Alabama doesn't beat themselves, it's going to be tough for an SEC team to beat them.
Is that more of a commentary on the rest of the SEC, or is it still a commentary on how good Alabama is? Because part of me thinks there's Alabama looks a little more vulnerable this year than they did last year.
I agree. Interesting. Yes, it is interesting, especially considering the injuries and the number of, what do they have, six drafted players off defense and the injuries at linebacker. I think that's a good observation. The commentary is very unique in the conference this year. The commentary from a lot of the talking heads is there's a drop-off in coaching in this conference. You know, with Spurrier not there, Les Miles gone, it just feels a little different in the conference. However, if you turn it upside down a little bit, if you were going to project to the offseason and name three coaches, head coaches, who would be hot names to fill other big-time jobs, I think the biggest, hottest names right now to be hired would be Dan Mullen at Mississippi State, Mark Stoops at Kentucky. He's gone 11-4 since he lost to Florida a year ago, and he's got him this week, and Derek Mason at Vanderbilt. So as much as people might say, boy, there's not as much good coaching going on in this conference, the three hottest prospects might be from this conference. So it's tough to figure out, but I think with Jalen Hurts being a little more experienced and with the bevy of running backs and with his ability maybe to get the ball to the wide receivers better this year than last year, I still think it's Alabama who, you know, yeah, they might yawn for a couple games and not look quite as good. But, they're getting three linebackers back this week. I still think they're the team to beat, and I think there's a clear step between them and the rest of the conference.
What are you excited to see from the Crimson Tide this week? Like, what are you tuned in for from being up there in terms of ways that they've changed or ways to be able to look at this football team as they do continue on that path looking to claim another Southeastern Conference championship?
Sure. I think the impact that Brian Daboll is going to have on the team is what I'm interested in mostly. That would be number one, because I think when Nick looked at it and he measured how the up-tempo, no huddle caught him a little bit in the last game when he couldn't hold the ball and keep it away from another hot quarterback, most of Nick's offenses in all of his years prior had a great balance and the ability, you know, maybe not to just roll over people running the ball, but keep them off balance, running, passing, play action. They became so much dependent on Jalen Hurts running that as soon as they met a team that could negate him, that could be as athletic as Jalen Hurts, like Clemson, they struggled on offense. So I think he's looking there and says, yeah, we may score with some big plays and our quarterback can gain a lot of yards, but can we run the ball when we have to run the ball to keep the quarterback on the sideline? Because look what's going to happen. When they get there in the playoff games, they're going to be playing against a Mason Rudolph or a Baker Mayfield or a Sam Darnold, she's McSorley at Penn State. They're going to want to keep him on the sidelines a little bit because even the great Alabama defense can't play 90-plus plays and shut down a good football team. So I think that's where, as they are a work in progress, can they use all their weapons and not just Jalen Hurts? That's number one. Number two is who replaces those two NFL edge rushers. When you look at Ryan Anderson and Tim Williams, I mean, they didn't have to blitz last year. They knew they had two NFL guys and defenses had to figure out a way to block them or keep a back in. Who will emerge in that spot this year? Would it be Rashad Evans? Will it be Anthony Hardaway? No, that's not his name.
It's Anthony Penny.
Jennings. Excuse me. Yes, I'm switching sports on. I think if they get a guy that can be a dominant or a lethal, now maybe not dominant, but a lethal edge rusher, they might not be any different than they were last year on defense.
This weekend with Vanderbilt coming to town, you kind of touched on them being maybe different weight division, got a playmaker, yeah, or a good player at quarterback. But I think Vanderbilt has at least surprised a lot of people in the way they've started.
Absolutely.
Beating Kansas State. You know, Kentucky over there in the East has done some good things so far, too, with the win against South Carolina. Between those two, is one of them, and I guess we'll find out a lot about Vandy this weekend, but heading into this game, if you've watched Vandy a little bit, is one of those two, you think, a legitimate contender in the East more than the other one? And I guess what has impressed you about Vanderbilt with what you've seen so far?
Well, ever since Derek Mason has taken over the defensive coordinator position a year ago, the team has done nothing but get better. They have a really nice formula going right now. They don't rush players on the field. They let these players come in. You know, they're not 4 or 5-star players that can play right away. So they have to go in the weight room. They have to mature a little bit. They have to learn, you know, the techniques that Derek wants in his defense. He's very aggressive. He plays a lot of man-to-man. And he drops that safety into the box and forces you to throw the ball, which means he puts pressures on his corner. So they are, again, they've got a nice mix of strong senior players and a few young players that he's been, you know, redshirting and getting ready to play. So I like their defense, but now, you know, the bell rings this week. I've been doing this now for 12 years. And in the last 11 years in the SEC, this is an impossible storyline to almost believe, that the three main games, the feature games, are Kentucky, Vanderbilt, and Mississippi State. It really is interesting. I think Kentucky has a legitimate chance to knock off Florida, for the first time in 30 years? Or
yep.
Is it 40 years? Who knows? Okay.
30 years.
I think 30 years. I think when you're looking at Mississippi State going into Georgia, Georgia obviously has to look a bit ahead. When they were looking at the schedule, they were going, okay, we've got a nice game prior to the Tennessee game. So now that looks like a heavyweight matchup, because not only did Mississippi State beat LSU, but they matched them physically in that football game. And that was very impressive. And Dan looks like he's got another one of those teams. And Kentucky, you know, they're just dying. They got humiliated last year playing against Florida. And now they've gone 11-4 since then, and they've got Florida coming in, a fragile Florida football team. They could go, you know, 2.5 quarters again without scoring a touchdown, or maybe they've found Felipe Franks and are going to let him do a few more things. But I like their spot. In fact, I like all three of them to make a statement game this week. If Mississippi State wins, they're a legit contender in the West. If Kentucky wins, I believe people are going to prop up and say, hey, does this really happening? Do they have a physical enough football team that they're going to contend? If Vanderbilt wins, I think people will salute Derek Mason and say he's building a program for the long run and he's on the right path.
Vanderbilt could probably just keep it within 10 or 14 points and they'd make that kind of statement.
Yeah. I agree with that. And the way I said it, I kind of didn't like it. You said it better. If they can keep this a football game, it's a great weekend for Vanderbilt football.
As you've looked across the nation, you mentioned when you were talking about Alabama, Nick Saban grading the Crimson Tide against some of the teams that they might be meeting in the playoff. Has your perception of the national scene, the top 5 or 6 or so teams in the country, has that changed much at all since the beginning of the season? Like, what's surprised you so far through 3 weeks of play?
How good Clemson is.
Oh, they're good.
They're reloading the way Ohio State, Oklahoma and Alabama have been reloading. Maybe even Florida State throw in there. I mean, it's hard to do what they do. I mean, they lost again. Usually when a team like Clemson has 6 players drafted, 2 number ones, even Ben Bolwer wasn't drafted, their middle linebacker, but I know he went somewhere. I don't know if he made the team, but he's good enough to play in the NFL. And they don't look like they've missed a step. In fact, their defensive line might look more dominating this year, and that's a defensive line 2 years in a row that took on and defeated an Alabama offensive line, and or at least went toe-to-toe with them. So now they're back again, and they look just as good. And with Kelly Bryant, yeah, I mean, I never saw that coming. I mean, they look really good, and maybe the team to beat in the country. I picked USC to go undefeated, and they've struggled a bit, which I'm a little bit surprised with, and they have a tough schedule in front of them. So, you know, maybe that's the one team. I also thought JT, my dark horse team and player to win the Heisman was JT Barrett. I really thought new offensive coordinator Kevin Wilson, he was once the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma under Bobby Stoops. He built the Indiana program, and he threw the ball and moved the ball on everyone. He was the offensive coordinator at Northwestern when Zach Kustak, and they were building that thing under Randy Walker and scored all those points. I thought he'd have an instant effect on this Ohio State offense, but that has not seemed to happen. So I would say the biggest surprise in the positive is Clemson, and in the negative is Ohio State.
What about Jeff Brohm start at Purdue? Gary.
How about that?
Well,
legitimately, now this Michigan going to Purdue that looked like part of a week schedule for Michigan coming up this week now looks like a football game. The way Purdue stood toe-to-toe with Louisville and the way they moved the ball last week, I think people are saying, okay, this is a football game. And if Michigan wins, they will earn that win. I think it's one of the really featured games on tap this week. The other one that's really interesting to me is Oklahoma State TCU. TCU has a brutal schedule. Oklahoma State looks like they reinvented offense. So I think that is a big game to look at. And understanding the Big 12, ironically, this year, with their early wins, TCU's win, Oklahoma State's win and dominance, Oklahoma's win at Ohio State, this might be the year they don't need the Big 12 championship game, and they might get it and not want it. It might be Oklahoma and Oklahoma State playing a rematch and knock each other out of it. So this might be the 1 year that the Big 12 doesn't need the game, and they end up having to play it.
Gary, before we get you out of here, I wanted to ask you about LSU, because that was obviously coaching change, big-name coordinator coming in. Should we start kicking dirt on their grave just yet, or what were your impressions of the way they got beat against Mississippi State last weekend?
I didn't really see the game, I have to admit, and I was shocked to see that, you know, I was riding back in the car, and the score kept going up and up and up, and it did appear that, you know, the LSU players again became frustrated. I think it's been something that has been sticking out for a while now, that, you know, they look at themselves at LSU as an equal to Oklahoma, Alabama, Ohio State, Florida State, you know, and it hasn't been working out that way. And I thought, you know, the guys that go to LSU don't return phone calls to Mississippi State when they're being recruited. And they just got a dog beaten out of them.
Yeah.
So you could see the frustration. As you said, two highly paid coordinators. I thought Matt Canada would be perfect for that offense as a transition from the running attack and a little bit more play action, a little bit more aggressiveness throwing the ball. But that one shocked me, I have to admit. So we will see if they, you know, as every coach tells you, nobody feels sorry for you in this league. That's for sure.
Well, Gary, thank you so much. Listeners, remember, you can catch Gary Danielson with Brad Nessler and Allie LaForce. It is the SEC on CBS Game of the Week. Alabama, number one team in the country, traveling to Nashville to play Vanderbilt. Get your Vanderbilt on CBS while you can. It's on right now, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time for the kickoff. You can watch it on CBS, CBSSports.com, and all OTT devices. Gary, thanks so much. We'll catch up next week.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Barton, it's a special thing to be able to look good and feel comfortable in underwear. It's something that you can only find at MeUndies. We've got our MeUndies.
It's life-changing, man.
Super soft. And the great thing, by the way, is that the fabric, which again, it's three times softer than cotton. It is a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric three times softer than cotton, and it you look great. So you feel naked, but you're not actually naked. The ladies,
great compromise.
Yeah, the ladies love the soft touch, and there's a 100% satisfaction guarantee that you will love your undies when you place an order. And you, as a listener of the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, you get 20% off, free shipping, and that satisfaction guarantee. Just go to MeUndies.com/CFB. That's MeUndies.com/CFB. College football. This is a limited time offer. Do not wait. Start wearing the best underwear of your life. It's changed our lives, and we are totally sold, so it's time to let MeUndies change yours. Go to MeUndies.com/CFB right now. I'm gonna
make you break it down. We're getting into specifics.
Game breakdown.
Specifics.
Game breakdown.
If they played on a neutral field, you would take them.
Breaking down the game.
And now, pleased to welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast from Dogs 247. It is Rusty Mansell. Rusty, how you doing, man?
Doing good. Just wait on this big game this weekend. I think all the buzz is turned up a notch after what Mississippi State did to LSU on national TV. I think that got the attention of the entire nation, but I think it got the attention of the Georgia Bulldog Nation really quick this past weekend.
Starting from what you thought about this Bulldogs team coming into the season through three games, what do you think has surprised you the most?
I knew their defense was going to be pretty good. I thought their front seven had a chance. I knew their interior guys. You start talking about Trent Thompson, a young man that we were high on 24/7 Sports in the 2015 class, a five-star defensive tackle out of Albany Westover High School. I knew he was going to be special, but I think the surprise so far for this season has been the play of Lorenzo Carter, former five-star high school player at Norcross High School. He has been tremendous. He has played like a five-star. He's played like an NFL first-rounder. 6'6", 245 pounds, and at times he has been unblockable. I think 14 tackles, 3.5 sacks, team-leading 7 pressures, quarterback pressures already. Davin Bellamy opposite of him, those guys. I think Georgia's defense was going to be good. I just didn't know how good the outside pressure is going to be. And when you can pressure the quarterback without bringing those exotic blitzes and things like that, it will cover up that young secondary that Georgia has. And that's been the surprise to me. They haven't had to bring a ton of pressure, and they've done it with their front seven. And Roquan Smith, absolute monster at linebacker, has played well. Obviously, with the Eason injury, that changed things. Jake Fromm hasn't surprised me. I knew he could do what he's doing. He's playing within the system, and he's getting better each game. But I think what really surprised me is how good Lorenzo Carter and Davin Bellamy have played on the edge.
Well, Rusty, defense has been obviously a strength. They've been awesome. Offensively, it's hard to tell for me whether they've just been sort of doing what they have to do to win or whether there's really going to be some concerns offensively long term. Where are we heading into Mississippi State? And I guess maybe just start at quarterback. Like, what's the latest? Is because as I understand it, Easton's practicing again. Is this still Jake Fromm starting week, or are we back to maybe get some Easton?
Well, you know, Jacob Easton was out on the practice field yesterday and doing some things, but I don't expect him to play this week. I think he was out throwing the ball. And knowing Kirby Smart, he probably was giving those guys a little bit something extra to think about. But I don't expect Jacob Easton to play this week. I don't know as far as when he'll be back. I do think maybe in a couple of weeks. But you're right. That's the question. What is the identity of Georgia's offense? You know, what are they going to be long term? What are they trying to do? Sometimes they throw a little bit. Sometimes they run a little bit. They haven't really created that identity. I know they want to run the ball with Nick Chubb and Sony Michel and this really good freshman, DeAndre Swift, U.S. Army All-American from Philadelphia. That is a big question. What are they going to do? I think a lot of those questions are going to be answered this weekend against a really, really good Mississippi State team. They are going to have to score points no matter how good that defense plays, in my opinion. But I just think right now there's still questions. What are they going to do? But when you look at Jake Fromm, he's had a couple of turnovers. but he's also made some big time throws. He had a big drop by Miko Hardman in the Notre Dame game, and he put one absolutely on the money this weekend to Riley Ridley on about a 50-yard gain. And when you do that and you can loosen him up a little bit, I mean, he's made a couple of true freshman mistakes, but he's also shown that he can throw the ball vertically and do that. So I think Jake Fromm, again, has played within the system. He's made enough plays to make the defense respect him. He's going to get you in and out of plays, and they're giving him the playbook a little bit more. But, again, the question is, what is the identity? What do they want to do? And I think some of those answers are going to be answered this weekend with Georgia. Are they still question marks next week? Or is Nick Chubb, they're running the ball? Or can they turn Jake Fromm loose, let him throw it 25 times? I think we're going to see that Saturday night.
How different would they look right now if Eason was under center? Or how different would they have looked the past couple weeks? Would they have been a little bit more wide open? Or is this? Do you think this is sort of the Georgia team that Kirby Smart envisioned this fall?
You know, it's kind of hard to answer that because I will say this, that the buzz around the fall and everybody I talk to, I know Kirby Smart, you don't get to go, the media sees very little practice area, but everybody I talk to that got a chance, and in fact, I talked to several people that were at the Tuesday practice before the Appalachian State game, and they were telling me how good Jacob Eason looked. They did a team session, and he was absolutely throwing darts and threw a couple of deep balls on the money. Well, he comes into the game on Saturday. He runs two series, had a couple of overthrown balls, didn't look great. They were in double tights. They go to a spread set, maybe going to try to run some RPOs with him on the third play of that series. He gets hurt. So you really don't know what Georgia would look like with him. Obviously, they probably dialed some things back a little bit with Jake Fromm because he's not going to be that threat that Jacob Eason can throw that ball over the deep man at any time. You always got to have somebody back. Tennessee learned that last year, almost cost them the game there at the end. But Jake Fromm, you know, short, intermediate, we know that, Bart. We've seen it all the time. He's going to pick you apart. He's going to throw a lot of things in between the hash. He's not going to make that deep throw all the way across the field, across the hash, as much as Jacob Eason would. But it's kind of hard to say where they would be. So it's going to be interesting when he comes back healthy, what are they going to look like with Jacob Eason? Because I don't think we honestly got the fair look at him based off what I was hearing from those 4 or 5 weeks of fall camp.
When that Mississippi State team comes to town, they've got a defensive front with Todd Grantham there and a defensive front that has grown up a lot over the last couple of seasons. How do you gauge that matchup of Georgia's offensive line going up against Mississippi State and in the hopes that Georgia would be able to open up some holes for Nick Chubb and Sony Michel to move the ball and keep the ball out of Nick Fitzgerald's hands?
Anybody that has covered Todd Grantham or anybody that's watched Todd Grantham's games or anybody that's studied film with Todd Grantham knows one thing. He loves to bring an extra guy. He's going to bring one more than you've got, and he's going to bring it from a different angle. When he was at Georgia, he would bring Jordan Jenkins and those guys and Leonard Floyd from different places at all times. He would line them up. He would bring a safety blitz. He is going to flat out come after Jake Fromm. I know Georgia is preparing for that all week. What is Fromm going to be? Is he going to be able to burn them? Because they're going to put their corners in a lot of one-on-one situations. Can Georgia, can those wide receivers, can 6'4" Javon Wims, can Riley Ridley and those guys separate to make a play? Terry Godwin, who's had a very good first three games, can he make some plays? Georgia's offensive line, can they get some push against them? That's going to be a matchup. But I think the chess play in this game is going to be how Georgia handles those blitzes, because Todd Grantham, you can say what you want about him, but you see, to read the stories on Will Muschamp and Kirby Smart, when those guys were at Florida and those guys were Alabama, they went out to Dallas at times and spent time with him with the Cowboys, and he showed them some of the blitzes and some of the things he would dial up. These exotic blitzes, quote-unquote exotic things he would do, and he will bring some stuff that Jake Fromm has not seen. How will he handle that? How will Georgia block it? Can the running backs help him? Can a young DeAndre Swift, if he's in the game, is he going to be able to pick up the extra guy? Because Todd Grantham is going to bring it against Jake Fromm this weekend.
Well, I think that brings up another point, too, because coming into this year, Rusty, I mean, we would talk about it all the time, just getting on the phone. Like, who's going to step up at offensive line? How good is the offensive line going to be? Because that was what the issue really was last year. So yes. I guess how do you grade out this offensive line through a couple weeks of the season, and how do you expect them to handle what Todd Grantham's going to throw at them?
Well, Barton, something that me and you kind of, I wouldn't say we didn't, but doing our job, we got to see it up close. Andrew Thomas, it took about a day and a half in San Antonio for me and you to go, uh-oh.
Yeah.
This guy needs to move up. And he put on a show in Texas, and he just carried over this fall. And that has been an absolute blessing in disguise for Georgia, because all the hype was around Isaiah Wilson. He's still probably going to be a good player for Georgia, but he is not game ready as Andrew Thomas, who had a bunch of offers. And don't get me wrong, he wasn't underrated. He was just needed to be higher rated based off what everybody saw. He has played right tackle and played phenomenal. This allowed Isaiah Wynn to play left tackle, where he's been a little bit more natural. Not the biggest guy, but he has great feet, and he has protected the blind side pretty well, Jake Fromm. Where Georgia has to be concerned is in the interior line. They are trying to figure out those guard spots. They've tried Kendall Baker there. They've tried Solomon Kinley there. They've got Lamont Galliard at center, who's been there. He's been up and down. You know, they've tried Deshaun Sims there. You know, where are they going to get who's going to be in the final mix there at those guard positions? Because that's where they're having some trouble at times. Solomon Kinley, 6'6", 330 pounds, absolute hammer at guard. And when he gets his hands on you, he moves you. Not the best pass blocker. So Kendall Baker, a better pass blocker, doesn't quite move the guys out of the box like the other guys. So they're trying to find the mix there inside. The tackles have played well, and Andrew Thomas has been the surprise of the fall. Interior-wise is where they've got to improve, and I guarantee you this weekend you're going to see some blitzes up the middle from Todd Grantham to try to expose that weakness in the Georgia offensive line.
So you've got some weaknesses on the offensive line, the young secondary that you mentioned, but still, when you look across the landscape of the Southeastern Conference right now, Rusty, I see a Georgia team that looks absolutely top tier, certainly in the SEC East, right there having boots on the ground. Do you feel like, knowing the rest of the SEC and knowing this Georgia team, do you feel like you're watching an SEC East championship caliber team?
Well, you gotta be honest. I don't care who you're a fan of. The East is not exactly bringing it to the table this year. I mean, when you look at what you saw this weekend, I mean, Missouri, that was, it spoke itself. The Tennessee-Florida game, that wasn't the Peyton Manning versus Danny Werfel days. I can assure you of that. you start looking at these games. I mean, look, Vanderbilt, don't sleep on Vanderbilt. I know Barton is aware of that. You see those, a great coach team. Kentucky, very impressed with their quarterback and how they went on the road. South Carolina with a huge injury to Debo Samuel. But you look at Georgia, and they have got to be the favorite. They are very, very, very upper-class team, especially on defense. You got Sony Michel. You got Nick Chubb. By the time they start playing these games, Jake Fromm's going to have some more experience. So, you know, this isn't life-or-death game for Georgia. But this is a game, if Georgia gets by this game, things really, really start looking up for them. They've got to go to Tennessee next week, and that's going to be a tough game always. And then they've got – but if Georgia gets by this game, things really start looking like, wait a minute, they could have a special season going on here. But they're going to play a very, very tough team on Saturday night. And I think, personally, Alabama, Mississippi State, and Georgia right now look to be the class of the SEC. I was very, very high on Auburn. I know their defense is really good, but right now their offense is just in shambles. So we'll see if they can correct that and see if they get fixed down the season. But, you know, Mississippi State with a senior quarterback, a lot of experience there. Todd Grantham's got them playing well on defense too. I'm just a big, big believer in playing well on defense, and especially with a quarterback like Fitzgerald, senior quarterback experienced guy.
So, Rusty, in some ways with the East being down, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. doesn't it make things almost a little bit trickier now for Kirby in the sense that now everyone expects him to win it? And he's still in year two, and he's still got a mm-hmm. true freshman quarterback. And
yeah.
What happens if he doesn't? What is the expectations in Athens right now and with the fan base. Is he forgiven if he slips up and lets somebody else take the East this year, or is the margin for error pretty slim for him right now? Just kind of take me through where you think the fan base is at.
This is a big boy league, and these guys are getting paid big boy money. I mean, that is, and these fans know that they are probably the heavy favorite to win this East, and they know what they've seen, and Georgia has not been back there in a couple of years, and this is a very, very experienced team. Kirby Smart will take, now he's not going to be on a hot seat, but he will take substantial amount of heat from some fans if they don't win the East. I will be honest with that, you know, in his second year. And, you know, if they were to get beat by some fluke play and they finish up 6-2 and somebody else 6-2 beats them head to head, that's different. But, you know, I certainly think they're the heavy favorite right now to win the East, especially where they're playing defense. And I think the Georgia fan base is certainly thinks they better be playing in that Mercedes-Benz Dome come early December.
Well, to your point, I guess it kind of depends on how they look doing it, too. Like, if they win the East and play some really good football getting there, that's one thing. But if they're, you know, nobody left that Florida-Tennessee game happy, winner or loser, because it just was ugly football. No. So I guess that's the next step for Georgia is just to look the part.
Yeah, you know, you go back to a year like 2007. I think South Carolina beat them, Tennessee beat them 35-14. I mean, absolutely destroyed Matt Stafford and No'Shawn Marino and those guys, just destroyed them. And then they ran off nine in a row after that and wound up finishing number two in the country. So nobody really talked about that game, but they finished 11-2. You know, at that point they were 3-2. There was a lot of heat on that team, but the way they finished, it took care of the problem. So there could be some losses, and you got to finish right at the right time. But I just think that the fan base knows it is right for the picking. They've got a very, very experienced team, a lot of experience on defense. You know what that means in the SEC. You're expected to win.
Well, in this matchup of first-class SEC teams, the top tier, let's go ahead and get to it. What's your game score? What's your prediction? What's your pick? You've mentioned some of the chess games going on here. Hey, Rusty, we got to get these picks.
This is big boy ball, Rusty. You said it now. You're coming on the show. You got to play big boy ball.
Hey, wait a minute now. Y'all didn't say that. About I had to pick this early in the week now. You know, I didn't really start thinking about it until this morning. And I talked to an NFL guy this morning, an NFL scout, and I talked to him about Mississippi State, and they've got some very highly rated players. I think this game is going to be one of those knockdown, drag-out Saturday night SEC games that you're used to seeing, and one of those games that everybody talks about, wow, that was two good teams and two good games, not one of those where everybody leaves on last Saturday going, I can't believe those two teams looked like that. I think Georgia is vastly improved in their special teams. And they brought in Scott Fountain from Auburn, who was a special teams coach there. He's now a quality control guy. He's helping Shane Beamer. You know, they've got the punter, the fifth-year graduate transfer from Columbia. I don't want to screw his name up, but he has been phenomenal flipping the field. Rodrigo Blankenship, other than the little short miss at Notre Dame, has been pretty good. He's kicking the ball off. Their special teams have been great. I think Georgia makes a play on special teams Saturday and wins this thing. And I'm talking, it is an absolute fantastic football game. I'm going to say Georgia 21-20, and it's going to be a nail-biter all the way through to the very end. And the only reason I'm taking Georgia, and I'll be honest with you, it is in Athens at night, and that place is going to be electric. It's going to be a SEC Saturday night, home field advantage toward the end. But I think Nick Fitzgerald coming home, grew up a Georgia fan. You know, his uncle played at Georgia. It's going to be – I think he's going to play well. I think at the very end, Georgia's going to make something happen on special teams, a fumble recovery, punt return, something. They're going to change the scope of that game. They're going to hold on to win 21-20.
Woo! Is it buzzing yet down there? Is the campus already hopping? I don't know. You're not in Athens right now, but what's going on down there?
I can tell you, there's nobody doing homework this week around there. I mean, you know, And the thing about Georgia's home schedule is not good at all this year. When you looked at the schedule early in the year, everybody talked about the South Carolina game. That was going to be the big game. And then all of a sudden, last week happens, and now this Mississippi State game. And when it happened, I mean, it turned quickly. And I can gauge things by my text messages. And when people started asking for tickets, if I knew anybody with tickets, Sunday morning at 7 a.m., I knew what kind of week it was going to be. And, you know, our board on 24/7, our Georgia board, they've got ticket requests. And if anybody listens to this, I don't have tickets. I'm not going. I'm going to sit in front of my TV and watch it like everybody else. So it's going to be a big-time environment, huge recruiting list. Probably number one player in the country, probably not 100% confirmed. Justin Fields probably be back in Athens again for the second weekend. So there'll be a lot of recruits there to watch that game.
This is the biggest atmosphere that we're going to have for a Georgia home game since what, the Auburn game last year? Maybe I was trying to run through my head that Saturday night environment in Athens, and it's been a minute.
Pregame, you go back to probably 2015 when it was raining, when Alabama came on the field, it was pretty hype, but that lasted not very long, as you can imagine. There was a lot of buzz going into that game, but Auburn's always a big, big game, you know, in Athens, but this one's different. There's so many stories around this. You know, I think the way Mississippi State just dismantled LSU is what's turned this thing up, because I read the boards and half of them still don't want to believe it. You know, that was a fluke. And the other half is, you know, we better strap it up this week. This is a real team. And the Nick Fitzgerald story is going to be told all week long. The kids from Savannah, Georgia, and Georgia didn't offer, you know, and nobody offered, you know, that's the story. Nobody offered. The kid played in the wing T, you know, quarterback his senior year only. But he's done a phenomenal job, and Dan Mullen's done a hell of a job developing him. And you got to give them a lot of credit. And everything I've heard about the young man, he's a great leader on and off the field, and probably going to have a good career on Sundays as well.
So, Rusty, before we let you get out of here, you know, this is typically a college football show this time of year, but the number one player in the country, we can make an exception for. So, give us the latest on Justin Fields, the guy that I've said is going to win a national title no matter where he goes to school. Where are we at? I know everyone's a little bit in the dark, but you're as connected as anybody. So so give me kind of the lay of the land on where things stand with Justin Fields right now.
I'll tell you how much he's watched. And Barton, we've been doing this a long time, and we went through the Jacob Easton deal. We've been through the Robert Kimdichie and Reuben Foster and all those kids in the state of Georgia. Justin Fields is so watched. I just got tagged on Twitter on what shirt he had on today at school.
Ha!
And that's not a big deal, but it's about the third day in a row I've been tagged on what shirt he's had on. You know, I know he had an Auburn shirt on Friday night. He had a Georgia shirt on Saturday. And today at school, he had a Florida State shirt on. So that's what type of attention he's drawing and all that. He was in Athens again last weekend. You go to his 24/7 sports profile, look at his timeline. That's the fourth time since July the 4th. Barton, what do you say on those things?
Follow the visits.
You follow the visits. You've always said that. Where is he going to probably go this weekend? That will be his fifth trip since mid-July. So if you're going to play the numbers, you're going to play the visits and watch things. He's been over there to Georgia a lot. His sister verbally committed to play softball at Georgia. She has been very vocal, from my understanding, where she wants him to play, and she wants him to go to school with him. So, you know, it's not over. I do think LSU is going to try to make a play right here at the end of this thing. They've got a situation that the quarterback could come in there and play pretty quickly. So, you know, he's going to be back over this weekend. We'll see what happens as far as that. But a young man that's extremely talented. I think the people, Barton, we've seen it. But I had so many people this past weekend text me that saw him for the first time and didn't realize how big he is. I mean, he's 6'3", 220. You know, he's not 6'1", 195. He's 6'3", 220, and he's got thick legs, and he's strong in his upper body. And I think that's what surprises people when they first see him. So he'll be watched. I'm sure if he steps back into campus this weekend, Twitter will light up again one more time.
So if you want to pass along the Justin Fields T-shirt report, listeners, or follow the T-shirt report,
don't tag me. Don't tag me.
You can follow Rusty Mansell on Twitter, at Mansell247, M-A-N-S-E-L-L. Rusty, man, this is not going to be the last time. We got to get you back, and because Georgia's the story in the East, man. We're excited for this weekend. Thank you for joining the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Thank you guys for having me.
Our thanks to our distinguished guests. Distinguished. Gary Danielson, Rusty Mansell. This is fun. An SEC-flavored episode of the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Hey, we got to give a little love to the Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt fans when we can. This is, like Gary said, this is going to be a unique, entertaining SEC weekend.
Do you think that Kentucky gets the Gators?
I'm as we sit here on Tuesday afternoon, I am still undecided, but I'm warming up to it.
Oh, I'm going against the spread for sure. Oh, you're Thursday. You will be submitting your picks via proxy. You'll send your locks to me?
Absolutely. I got to keep riding this heater. I'm not letting my wife having a baby be a cooler for me. I'm ready to roll.
Much love and all the thoughts to the Simmons clan. It's going to be an eventful rest of the week for you. So,
it's been a long 9-month preseason. We're ready for game day.
All fired up for game day. Tom Fornelli will be here, and we will be holding it down, dropping the locks as best we can. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Make sure that you subscribe to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, because subscribers get them first. Barton, best of luck. Talk soon.
Thanks, brother. See you.